Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. By 2040, the greater New York area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, should create 2 million jobs in accessible locations, substantially increase real incomes for all households. By 2040, conditions should exist such that everyone is able to live longer and be far less likely to suffer from mental illness or chronic diseases such as asthma, diabetes, or heart disease. By 2040, the tri-state region should sharply reduce poverty, end homelessness, close gaps in health and wealth that exist along racial, ethnic, and gender lines, and become one of the least segregated regions in the nation instead of one of the most segregated. These are the goals that the Regional Plan Association think tank promises if the region's governments follow its much-awaited fourth regional plan for New York's tri-state region. The RPA has been in business for nearly a century. Its first regional plan from the 1920s proposed many urban highway projects, such as the George Washington Bridge, that actually came into being, so people do take their recommendations seriously. This new plan has been most discussed, including on this show, for its proposal to temporarily end 24/7 subway service in the city so major improvements can take place more quickly. But it includes so much more, far-reaching proposals in many areas of the city to improve affordable housing, transit, and green sustainability, and not just the city, but the whole region. So we're going to talk about others of those proposals now with Tom Wright, president of the Regional Plan Association, and Rohit Agarwala, co-chair of the RPA's fourth regional plan for the New York metropolitan area. He's also adjunct professor at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs and chief policy officer at Sidewalk Labs. So Tom and Rohit, thanks for coming into WNYC today. Good morning.
Great to be here.
Good morning.
So Tom, the report starts ticking off some of the area's fundamental problems: inequality, depressed transit, poverty. The report states solving these existential challenges will require public officials and citizens to reassess fundamental assumptions about public institutions. This transformation is the underpinning for many of the recommendations in the plan. I'm exhausted already.
And you haven't even gotten to the recommendations
yet. That's right. Where do you start?
Well, listen, this is something we do once every generation. And I think a big part of what we looked at was the governance institutions, and taking attack on them this time was a change for us at RPA. In the past, we've looked more at the housing, community development, land use, transportation issues. But I think we, as the board, and Rit was the chair of this effort, as we kind of started to talk about these issues, we felt that the institutions that are supposed to be solving these, that are supposed to be preparing us for resiliency and sea level rise, that are thinking about how we develop more housing, just are not up to the challenge. And so we start with a kind of section on fixing the institutions that are failing us, and talk about everything in that, from changing our property tax structure, figuring out how to build transit for less, and other recommendations. And, you know, the response to this has been very positive. But there's still some folks who, there's a kind of cynicism sometimes that creeps into the conversations that we're really trying to combat, because we think that we can change these issues and really improve things.
We did a whole series on the show about affordable housing in New York and New Jersey, one of your big topics, and it's tricky. Obviously, the mayor has his own vision to build or preserve 200,000 units of affordable housing. Your report states that 500,000 homes could be added to the region without even constructing new buildings. How would that happen?
Well, one of the core ideas there is to permit the widespread use of accessory dwelling units. You've got thousands and thousands of homes, particularly in the single-family and two-family home areas of our region, with lots of unused space. And you could have that in-law flat or the granny flat or whatever, but it's local zoning that prevents it. And so that is where you get a tremendous amount of excess housing for the college student or the recent grad who right now hasn't got anywhere that they either can afford or is attractive for them to live, particularly in the suburbs.
You mentioned some things that are considered innovative ideas in some circles, but with terms that people may not know. granny flat and in-law flat?
Well, it's just a colloquial expression for taking the rooms above the garage, or having a separate basement that has a separate apartment in it, and basically taking what's a single-family home and having an accessory dwelling unit.
And the plan contends the city could bolster its stock of affordable housing by changing a state law that caps the size of residential buildings, especially in affluent areas like the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side, downtown Brooklyn, and Long Island City. The mayor is already doing this in large parts of the city with his zoning program, and many have complained that even apartments considered affordable by city standards are too expensive. Does this boil down to more height and density for more affordability?
That's certainly going to be part of it. I mean, why the state is capping at a 12 floor area ratio, FAR, as we say in planning talk, in terms of the density of housing in Manhattan, seems absurd to us. The city should be in charge of its destiny on this, and the mayor and his administration have been making a lot of progress on this. At the same time, they've been the first ones to say that housing, it's a regional housing market, and so New York City can't do this on its own. It's going to take Jersey City and Hudson County. It's going to take Westchester, places like New Rochelle. It's going to take parts of Nassau County to really pick this up too. And one of the other things that we talked about in the report was how much vacant space there is around train stations. And in particular, you know, right now—
In the suburbs.
In the suburbs. And right now, all that land is kind of used to babysit cars during the day. And we know that with technology, with for-hire vehicles and Uber and others coming online, there are going to be cheaper, more effective ways for people to get that first and last mile to and from the train station. And if that land frees up for redevelopment, we estimated that we could build 250,000 new housing units within a 10-minute walk of a commuter rail station.
Do you think we're on the verge of that, Rohit, in a lot of places? I think some towns, you're already seeing, because it's in the developer's interest to start building apartments within walking distance of, you know, NJ Transit stations or Long Island Railroad or Metro North. We had the two candidates for Nassau County Executive on the show during the campaign, and even the Republican candidate who lost was saying, yeah, we need to build up more density to attract more young adults to revitalize the economy. People are moving out of Long Island. They're not moving in. To do that around LIRR stations. So there seems to be an appetite for it.
Well, I think the tide is changing, and it is the long-run change from a focus of growth being at the family that wants a single-family home with a backyard, to where both the population and the economic growth is concentrated in two areas. It's seniors, for whom the 4 or 5 bedroom house is a waste of space, probably more than they can afford, certainly more than they want to take care of. And at the other end, it's either the singles, or people are staying single longer. They might be living with a roommate or whatever, but they're delaying having a family. So the housing market is changing. And so what you see is more and more of those suburban families realize that their children, when they grow up, they move to the city or they move out of the region. That's not a good outcome for the economy. Not a good outcome for the people of the suburbs.
So let's turn to transit now. And listen, I see we're getting some calls already. Anybody who wants to talk to Tom Wright and Rohit Agarwala, leaders of the Regional Plan Association, and their fourth regional plan. And these don't come along every day. The last one was 20 years ago. So this is the big gradual, you know, 30,000 feet view of what could improve the greater New York area. And a lot of policymakers take this seriously. So what are you hearing that you want to comment on? What do you want to ask? That's your original contribution, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, primarily on housing, transit, and sustainability. And let's turn to transit in what may be the report's grandest proposal. It calls for what you call the Trans-Regional Express, or T-Rex. Yes, really. The new regional rail network. Who wants to tell us about it?
I'd be happy to talk about it. Well, look, the most important investment in front of the region, and frankly in the nation right now in mass transit, is to build a new tunnel under the Hudson River, the Gateway Program, which has been advancing. Amtrak, New Jersey Transit, New York have been kind of working together on this, and it's vitally critical that move forward. But the truth is, when we look out 25 years, Gateway will not provide by itself enough capacity to move the people in and around the region that we're going to need. And so what we talk about is a series of steps to build on that with our regional rail proposal to take Gateway out to Sunnyside, Queens, and make it a through-running operation. That then allows more capacity so that the New Haven line can come down into Penn Station. Then what we talk about is using essentially the underutilized lines on the Long Island Railroad on the Atlantic Avenue branch. And then there are rights of ways up in northern New Jersey and Bergen and Passaic counties that are little used, freight used right now. And we talk about kind of trying to connect those pieces to each other with new tunnels, new system that would really create a kind of integrated regional system. More closer to New York City, what we really identify is fixing the subways, and we want to do it fast. It needs to be done. We set an ambitious but we think achievable goal of doing it in 15 years rather than the roughly 50.
That's the modern definition of fast.
That is, and it would be a huge change from where we are. And that's everything from upgrading the signals so that we're using a modern signal system the way the rest of the world is, improving the stations so that they're accessible for everyone who needs them, and bringing in new cars with the open gangways that have more capacity.
Before we even go on to some of the things that you also recommend with respect to transit infrastructure, like you're for the BQX, you're for an AirTrain from Manhattan to LaGuardia, these are controversial proposals. When you put all these things together, or even take some of them, this is massively expensive. We know how expensive each mile of rail is at this point compared to when they built the subways, you know, over 100 years ago, where if somebody said 15 years to modernize it, what do you mean 15? We're going to get this done in 15 months. So how are you going to finance all this, Rohit?
Well, I think there's a couple of observations that we make in the plan on that score. The first is that, and we're going to be coming out with a follow-on report very soon about the cost of construction. There is no question that New York spends more than twice as much money for every unit of increased capacity on its transit system than any other city in the world. We're not talking about cities with low cost of living or bad safety standards or that treat its their employees terribly. We're talking about London, Los Angeles, Tokyo, places like that. We are more than 2x the cost, which means the first step is reforming the cost structure, which in our proposal includes creating for the MTA, for the subways, a subway reconstruction authority. And the idea there is with the current structure, with the current habits, with the current practices of the MTA, you're never going to get anything done at a reasonable cost. You need a new entity that can draw from private sector practices that may make use of the fact that the governor's created a state of emergency around the subways. And I know Tom Prendergast talked about that with you a couple of days ago. The other thing, though, is to think about new revenue sources. You know, the RPA, in fact, one of the ideas in the third regional plan from 96 was congestion pricing for Manhattan. It's not a new idea.
Still
I've talked
waiting.
About it a lot. Still, we're optimistic now. But that's one great revenue source. A lot of people said when I was in the Bloomberg administration, we proposed congestion pricing. They said, you know, I'd give it to Mayor Bloomberg because I'd trust him to get value for that money, but I wouldn't give it to the MTA. And to a certain extent, as Tom said earlier, that's an indication of why we need this institutional renewal. People aren't going to hand the MTA a big new revenue stream because they just don't trust it. If you can create a new institution that has people's confidence, you'll earn the right to do that. We also talk about the need to create an economy-wide carbon tax for the region, ideally to link New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut into the California system so that you're not only addressing the power plants, which our current cap-and-trade system does, but you're talking about all of the sources of carbon. California's investing in high-speed rail. It would make total sense for us to invest in the subway system.
At a time when people are so cynical about institutions, including government institutions, being able to deliver, why think that creating a new bureaucracy to replace the MTA or even lay over the MTA, the regional transit establishment that you're talking about, would get things done in a better way?
Well, I think it doesn't have to be a bureaucracy, and that's actually the point. If it's just another state agency or just another authority that's set up the same way the MTA or the Port Authority or some of the others are set up, it's not worth it. But what we envision is thinking about a dedicated purpose corporation, something that legally isn't an authority, isn't a state agency, is actually a private corporation set up as a nonprofit. You could pay private sector wages. We want actually the leaders of that to be incentivized to get the job done personally so they'll make more money. That's the use of capitalism to public purposes. We want it to be able to make deals and do things wisely and efficiently in a way that unfortunately people no longer think government can.
Let's get some calls in here. Our board is full of people wanting to talk about the region and regional planning.
That's great.
How about that? Is this a nerdy show or what?
That's wonderful.
We love you.
Our constituency.
John in Bradley Beach. You're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks, Brian. I was made aware of the Regional Plan Association through our work on climate change. I work for a coastal environmental group. And since this is the fourth plan, I imagine this on dealing with climate change, I'm hoping the guests can touch on what's in the plan that prepares us for climate change.
Thank you. And that's a major piece of this fourth regional plan, right? It's
yes.
housing
mm-hmm.
as part of general affordability, it's transit, and it's very much green sustainability, Tom.
Yeah. One of the four action items in the plan is called Rising to the Challenge of Climate Change, and recognizing that how we plan for a changing coastline and what this region is physically going to look like a generation from now is going to be very, very different from today. There are a lot of recommendations around it, but I'll just highlight two of them in particular. One is we know that post-Superstorm Sandy, New York City really did prepare with its special initiative and Plan YC, which RIT, you should recognize it, also led under Mayor Bloomberg, and then the One New York initiative under Mayor de Blasio. New York City has real planning capacity. But as I like to say, there are 782 municipalities in the tri-state metropolitan region, and one of them is New York City, and it's 8.5 million people, and 781 are not.
600 of them are in New Jersey.
In New Jersey. And they're all
they've carved up the state
exactly,
into so many
actually.
Little towns.
Well, and there's a sad history of racism, frankly, behind a lot yep. of that, too. But so the planning capacity of those communities is not at the same level as New York. And resiliency and rising sea level and other challenges that we're facing today, frankly, if one community kind of plans in isolation to deal with that, they'll flood their neighbors. And so what we talk about is establishing a tri-state resiliency commission that would create an overlay plan that would allow those communities would still have their local planning functions, but they would have to do it based on standards to make sure that we're all providing resiliency across communities. And a lot of mayors and communities have really bought into this idea.
Kathy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah, I was interested in these grandiose plans that you say by 2040, you know, so much of the poverty in the city will be eliminated. And I just wanted to add that whenever planners include, you know, their structures that they want to attack and everything, they never talk about the existence and the potential of land in terms of its value, and that can be taxed for its revenue. For instance, New York City, in terms of land, is worth $1 trillion. That would more than pay for all the other revenue that you get from sales taxes and any other taxes on production, and you could eliminate a lot of these problems that you're talking about, because to me one of the biggest disgraces is homelessness. Really the land value tax is really the way to go.
Who likes the land value tax and who doesn't?
Well, I think that there are a number of ways to capture value from real estate, and I think in the fourth plan we talk aggressively about the need to do that. You could think about value capture, where new investments raise the value of land either by stimulating new development or simply raising the price. It's something we don't use in this region at all. We really need to. And lots of other places. London, for example, financed a great deal of their new gigantic crossrail system based on that approach. That's an important way. But I think, you know, your overall point is actually one that the fourth plan makes over and over again, which is that the value of the land and the real estate in this region, and there are a lot of different numbers, and it's hard to pin it down. One study showed about $2.5 trillion being the land in the whole region. $2.5 trillion is roughly the built value of New York City. There are a bunch of different ways, but any way you slice it, the incremental impact on the overall economy and the value of that land from making the kind of capacity investments we're talking about, a 21st century subway system, the T-Rex, protecting it from long-term flooding, is worth it. And this is one of the things that we are trying to get people to recognize. We assume that you can only, say, think about taxes as we know them today. You can only do value capture through existing means. The fact is there's a huge opportunity for this region out there to do great things if we're willing to realize, in fact, how wealthy we really are.
But it sounds like if you're talking about practically ending poverty and, in fact, ending homelessness in the greater New York region by 2040, that most of your plans run through development, infrastructure, and more dense housing development than through anti-poverty program or human capital programs. Am I hearing it right?
Actually, let me say, we recognize the threat of gentrification and displacement in this, and the plan talks about protections for existing communities. What we want to try to do is kind of change the playing field, rebalance it. Communities that are seeing growth pressure right now, often there's a kind of there's a deal going on for the local communities, which is to say, we want to try and grow here, we want to develop here. But if you don't provide protections for the existing population through tenant protection, legal means and others, and of course, making affordable housing part of that development, then they're getting a raw deal. And so we talk in the plan about changing the local planning issues and making sure that we protect those existing communities as part of the growth dynamic that we are expecting. The flip, though, I want to say, what we see in this region right now is there's enormous growth. People want to come here. They want to live here. They want to work here. Businesses want to grow. And if we don't expand capacity in our housing markets, in our transit system, if we don't do these kinds of investments, what we're worried about is we're going to start to look more and more like the Bay Area, which is a place that's seen this enormous economic growth without doing the policy and investment that we're talking about. Hmm. And that's not a good future for us.
We're going to run out of time shortly. I just want to come back to a couple of these transit development plans that you're all in on that are controversial. One is Governor Cuomo's AirTrain between Manhattan and LaGuardia. There was an article on the real estate-oriented website Curbed that was critical of the RPA's fourth plan for, you know, yeah, picking up too many different people's agendas on development that are unnecessary. So one of the arguments against the AirTrain to LaGuardia is it goes to Willits Point before it goes west, I guess on the 7 train, and so it's a two-trip ride, and it goes west before it goes east to get to Manhattan. Also that there is an existing bus system that goes from LaGuardia into Manhattan, and maybe improving that is cheaper and as effective as the AirTrain.
I think the blogger missed the point of that investment. Look, the AirTrain, what the AirTrain to LaGuardia does is it essentially kind of expands the landside capacity at LaGuardia Airport. To do it, it has to be done right. There has to be a really, really good transfer and good service out to the AirTrain, and it has to be a seamless transfer between the new service and existing ones. But what it will allow to happen is kind of activities that have no space at LaGuardia right now can move out to that section. And essentially what we're talking about is kind of expanding the footprint of LaGuardia Airport.
And very quickly on BQX, the Curb writer says transit experts, urban planners say the best practice, if you're going to build a light rail system in an urban area, it's to look where the bus lines are the most overutilized and build something parallel to that. And the bus lines are not overutilized along the Brooklyn-Queens waterfront.
Well, I think there, too, that's looking backwards, and it's looking at what is and thinking about streetcars only as an upgrade of bus service as opposed to a catalyst for development. I think you build the BQX, you're going to get that route becoming an iconic route.
So much in the fourth regional plan. And fourth, you know, these don't come out every few months. The last one was in 1996. And the first one was when?
1929.
So the Regional Plan Association, a Greater New York region think tank, looks at the really big picture and comes out with really big ideas. They've been really influential over the decades. And this fourth regional plan is just out. And we thank President of the RPA, Tom Wright, and Rohit Agarwala, co-chair of the RPA's fourth regional plan development process, who's also an adjunct professor at Columbia University School of International and Public Affairs and chief policy officer at Sidewalk Labs, for going over some of the basics with us and some of the details. Thank you so much, both of you.
It's been a great pleasure.
Great to be here.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We will meet the New York Times new gender editor, Jessica Bennett, next.